cell phones, pagers, so we don't get disrupted, because we're going to have a lot of highly technical and important information today delivered by Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who will be first up. And this is the Department of Human Services Governor's Recommended Budget Reshoot. So welcome,
welcome
back.
Thank you.
We can pass them down. Anytime you guys are ready.
Okay, we're ready. Vice Chair Boone, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Goldberg, the Director of the Department of Human Services. With me today are John Swanson, Jim Scherzinger, and Eric Moore, and we are here today to talk to you about the Department of Human Services reshoot. And we plan to do this in two stages, if that's okay. First stage is, what I'd like to do is provide some context for the reshoot. And then the second piece will be John and Jim going through the details or the numbers that comprise it, if that's okay with you.
You can do whatever you like.
Okay. Well, I'll just leave.
except that.
I'm actually thrilled to be here today. And I think, as everybody knows, what we're here today to talk about is the reshoot of the governor's budget. What's customarily done at this point in the session is to go back and recalculate the DHS budget with the new spring forecasts. We've talked a lot about forecasts and caseloads, and you haven't heard the last of it, because today you're going to hear a little bit more, because it's an important issue. And when we develop the governor's budget, it's based on the 2006 fall forecast. We now have a new forecast, which is the spring 2007 caseload forecast. And we, in essence, reshoot the budget and take care of any structural problems that have been found in the budget since its development. And that's the reshoot. The punchline to the conversation is the number on your first page, which is $33.7 million of general fund. And I say that because it's probably the least important thing that we're going to talk about today. What's more important is some of the process and what makes this up. But what John and Jim will walk you through is why we would need $33.7 million less in general fund to do what was in the governor's recommended budget. To put that in some context, that's 1% of the DHS general fund budget. And in essence, this is driven by our caseloads. I've spoken to you many times before about the fact that we do, and as you've heard over the last several months, we do a lot of critically important things for some of our most vulnerable citizens. And when we're always here in Ways and Means, we're here talking about dollars and cents, but in the end, this is about people, and it's about the services that we're able to provide to them. 85% of the dollars in our budget, as you know, are spent in Oregon communities helping provide services to our neighbors. We pay providers of care. We pay for support for many of our clients, such things as food stamp payments, payments to foster parents, paying doctors and nurses and hospitals and nursing homes, and the huge array of services that we provide. So that's where the dollars go. And that's driven by what drives our DHS budget and what's driving the reshoot today are changes in our caseload, with, as I put in, a a slight assist by the cost per case. What drives our ability to calculate a budget is based on our ability to predict what caseloads will be over the next 2 years and what the cost per case are going to be over the next 2 years. And to put that in perspective, my guess is people spent about $3.40 for a gallon of gasoline today. And the question would be, can anyone predict what the cost of driving from Portland to Klamath Falls will be in January of 2008, what the price of a gallon of gasoline will be? We couldn't have predicted that, I don't think, a year ago, as to what, not the cost per case, but the cost per trip would be today as opposed to a year ago. So what drives our forecast, what drives our caseload, are a number of environmental factors. And those are on page 4. We've been through some of these before. What drives our caseload is the economy, how robust or problematic our economy is, means how many of our friends and neighbors are able to have jobs, how good those jobs are, whether they pay living wages, with the ability for families to support themselves with food and shelter, whether they provide benefits such as health care. Our population demographics matter. How many people come in or go out of the state? What the demographics of those people are. Are the people who come in, do they have jobs or don't they have jobs? What's the median income in the state? All these things drive, as you know, the services that we provide. State and federal policy changes. These, and I'll get to a few examples of that in a moment, have tremendous impact on our budget, our caseloads, and the services that we provide. Changes in federal programs, as an example, the federal match rate that we receive. If that were to change 0.5%, I believe that our combined federal match rate right now is 60.85%. If that were to change 0.5%, go to 60.35%, that would be about $35 million over the course of the biennium, which is the exact number, close to the number of that we started today's presentation with. And it's not unusual for states to see a 0.25% change in the federal match rate. Epidemics, natural disasters will certainly affect our costs, our ability to deliver services. Certainly the next epidemic that you see on the page, methamphetamine, is a huge environmental factor that drives our child welfare caseloads. We know that 60% of kids in the child welfare system are there because their parents have alcohol, methamphetamine, or other substance abuse problems. And, you know, it's fascinating because when I talk to my colleagues in a state like Maine or in Massachusetts, that's not an environmental factor that they have on their radar screen. So, I mean, these vary from state to state, from region to region, from year to year. And the last is our delivery system, the capacity to deliver services. If we don't have an ability to deliver services, caseloads will change in a variety of ways. The biggest example I'll give you is if we don't have adequate primary care doctors and nurses in our communities and people can't get primary medical care, they'll end up in emergency rooms and at a much greater cost per case than they do now. And that's why all this is very, very interrelated.
Dr. Goldberg,
yeah. What is the number one driver on caseloads?
Chair Boone, Representative Garrard, I think that varies from program to program. But let me give you a few examples. So as I mentioned, certainly in the child welfare system, what tends to drive, and all these things are multifactorial, and it's always hard to tease out
one from two from three, and there's probably a lot of different opinions, but there are several key drivers for a variety of our programs. In child welfare, it's certainly, as I mentioned, 60% of kids are in our child welfare system because of parental substance abuse issues. So it's the substance abuse issues. It's also the availability or inavailability of treatment. It's about living wage jobs and the ability for some of those families to not live in poverty drive a lot of the child welfare caseloads and the kind of community supports that we provide. In the Oregon Health Plan, it's driven by the cost of health care, the economy, the ability of individuals and businesses to be able to support providing benefits to people is a huge driver. The food stamp caseload is driven by the economy and by the ability to have living wage jobs. So in each of our programs, there are unique and different drivers. And I think in the long run, our ability to be successful is going to be our ability to really understand program by program what those are and get at some of the root causes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Senator Gordon, thank you very much. Dr. Goldberg, good afternoon. And before you finish your presentation today, would you also touch on the subject of West Nile virus and where that fits into our overall discussion today? How prepared are we as a state? What should we be aware of as a Ways and Means subcommittee, et cetera? Thank you.
Absolutely. The next page really summarizes what I'll give you a bit more detail about in a moment, which is about variation in caseloads. And if indeed caseloads are what are driving the reshoot, are what drive the budget, the issue is our ability to be able to predict caseloads over the next 2 years out into 2009. And what the variation of that is. If you just take all of our caseloads and, in essence, put all those different things, those different drivers together, and look at what would be just the normal variation of what that would be based on history, based on the environment as we know it today. And you put it on a piece of paper, it looks like this. There really is just a normal variation of what would be plus or minus $120 million of general fund. There's a lot of people in there. But in terms of dollars, it's about plus or minus. And as we get further out, that variation increases. So our ability, once again, to predict caseloads for June is pretty darn good, very accurate. And for July, very good too. We can probably get within a four-figure dollar number. But when we get out into 2008 and out into the first 6 months of 2009, very problematic. And so what this is, that $120 million is a compilation of everything between now and the end of the budget cycle, what our potential risk is, what the normal variation is. And in other words, any line within there is a normal line and can be an expected caseload without any of the environmental factors that I indicated. That's without a change in federal policy. That's without other kinds of issues. And let me walk through a couple of examples of that, because I think it's important to understand some of those.
Thank
you. Was there a shortfall of 50-some million dollars about a year ago as a result of the caseload situation, which had a ripple effect in the counties? Is that
Chair Boone and Senator Morissette, there was a when I took this job a little over a year ago, where we had a shortfall, that my recollection is that the caseload figure was closer to $100 million for the biennium. And since that time, we have made what I believe, and we've talked about with this committee, I think tremendous strides and ability in being able to better be able to predict some of the caseloads. But we cannot do that perfectly, much as no one can predict the state's economic position 2 to 4 years from now, price of a gallon of gasoline, the cost of a gallon of milk, or anything else. And we will continue to do our best efforts at doing that, but I think that it's important to understand what we're dealing with in the context of the DHS budget and what we need to be mindful of.
Just to piggyback, and I would like to commend the agency for the work that it has done, particularly in forecasting, which is probably one of the most difficult for this agency. Unlike some of the other agencies that are dealing with absolutes, this agency does not deal with, quote, absolutes, and there's a lot of variables inside of this agency, and that's another reason why they come in every 6 months to rebalance. But the work that they have been doing over the past year or so has actually refined their ability a lot to be able to give us as close as possible the caseload numbers, but also Mr. Goldberg, Dr. Goldberg is correct. It's to hit it head on. I don't think that that's terribly unrealistic for that expectation. It used to be, Representative Girard, that we used to say that the economy and jobs were probably the number one indicator for what happened in DHS. However, there have been so many other things that have added since the old days, particularly when you talk about methamphetamine, you talk about the courts and some of the other interventions that comes into that agency. That is no longer the number one. If you want to look for the question that you ask, what is number one? That is no longer the number one factor. They have a lot of factors now that they deal with that they didn't have to deal with when I was there a lot of years ago. So just wanted to say I think you're doing a very good job of refining and presenting to us the forecasting.
Thank you.
I'm going to pile on a little bit here and help out, I hope. I agree with everything the Senator said here. The other piece of this picture is that historically, the department really hasn't done that bad a job predicting either. They've been within 1 or 2 percentage points. What people lose track of, and we all do, certainly I do, it's a $3 billion dollar budget. 1 or 2 percentage points on $3 billion is a lot of money. It's almost something we have a hard time grasping sometimes. I remember a couple cycles back, suddenly $110 million was found, and people were just going off on that. Money wasn't found; it was an issue. It was caseload change. We couldn't make that point to anybody. We couldn't make it to the Oregonian or anybody else. It was $110 million after a tough tax vote. People just went berserk. It's within a percentage point. You're doing a better job now than before, which I appreciate. But I would tell you, most companies have a hard time predicting what's going on a quarterly basis, on an annual basis. I don't know if any company tries to do it 2 years out. It's insane budgeting. In other words, you're coming back in February. So my personal feeling is, you're doing a great job, but let us not forget it's a $3 billion budget. The money in the margins is very important. And the reshoot giveth, but the reshoot also can taketh away. So we want to watch the e-board. We want to be back in February.
One more question.
Chair Boone and Senator Bates, I totally agree on what well said. And the only thing I'd like to just add to that is that's why we collectively, we can't just talk about this at reshoot and then at budget development. This has to be something that all of us diligently follow and understand month by month. That's I think the thing that we've done. The biggest improvement we made has been to be able to have this be a continuous piece that's integrated into what we all do, and that's why I keep coming back talking about it.
Okay, Representative Morgan.
Okay, again, just a couple of comments, Madam Chair, and thank you for your indulgence here. I really do agree with what Senator Winters and Senator Bates said, but I think that we need to acknowledge that another reason that caseloads fluctuate is us, that we put policy changes in place that have unknown impacts on caseloads, and that there's an aspect of this there, too. I think that more important than trying to pin down causes are trying to look forward to some solutions to this. And I think that there have been some great things happen within the agency to try to deal with this. One of the things I hope that we have a discussion around is the potential for operating reserves in some of these accounts that can help when those are downside projections, and using some of the upside projections to help create those reserves. And I think that most businesses, again, have those kinds of reserves in place to deal with changes, and that we've talked a lot in DHS about how difficult it is to have to just slam on the brakes in these programs, and that it's very difficult on the providers of care, it's very difficult on the people that are receiving the services to have to deal with those sudden stops and starts. And I do think that a discussion around reserves so that you can kind of go up slowly and go down slowly is a viable way to go on this.
And I'm going to hand the gavel back to our good Senator Chair Carter.
Thank you.
We've got a lot of ground to cover, so I'll let you go ahead, and then she can keep it heavy from now on.
Okay. Chair Carter, we're walking through some of the caseload pieces that are driving our reshoot. And we're on the next page that looks like this, and it really will follow nicely with what Representative Morgan talked about, because I want to walk through a couple of examples that I think illustrate that. The page that shows medical assistance programs total spring 2007 forecast. What this just shows you is this is our, in essence, our reshoot forecast with those variation lines around them. And this is just for the Medicaid program. And what this shows you is that shaded area is $43 million of general fund on the top side, and it's $43 million of general fund on the bottom side. And you can see that as we get out further and further in the biennium, that widens. And on the next page is an example of policy changes and how things change, and economy changes, and environmental changes. What you have on the next page is this is a subset of our Medicaid caseload, the TANF medical, those individuals who are in the Medicaid program and part of the TANF program. And what you see is the caseload up till March 2006. That was when we sat down to do the forecast. And the question is, where would you draw the line? Is it going to go up, down, flat? Are we going to see a hump, a trajectory upwards, a plateau? A lot of different environmental programmatic factors. The economy had gotten better. More people were working. So individuals that had come into the TANF program throughout 01, 02, and 03. Perhaps some of them were going to be finding jobs. Well, the next page is our forecast.
Professor?
Yes.
Would you say that since you're going to be bringing the forecasting in-house, that you won't have to wait so many months behind that whatever growth or that depression that you might have coming, that you will be able to see this faster, and as a result of how government is running this in this state, you have a better opportunity to come in before you get too far out?
Chair Carter, we'll be bringing in the actuarial piece and expanding the ability to better do these forecasts, which will indeed enable us to do that.
Members, the reason I brought that up is because you're going to be asked in their POPs to be bringing these people on the inside, and so when you're asked to do that, you can anticipate it in terms of why are you asking for so many people, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
Chair Carter, we actually can bring some of this actuarial work in-house, and we believe save money by doing it.
Sorry. Question? Thank you. Oh, somebody's
hand was up? Before you page, Dr. Goldberg, Madam Chair, is your last hard data July 06?
The current forecast is fall 2006, and for the spring 2006 forecast, the last hard data is it's March of 2006.
So follow up. So you're dealing with the 2-year budget, and your data is like 8 or 9 month lag.
Yes.
Is there any way of getting that data in faster?
Chair Carter, Senator Bates, two issues. One is the hard data and some things we're doing to get that data in sooner, because that's been one of the things we've been working on. The current forecast, which was actually completed a couple of months ago, that this budget is now we shot on. The last hard data was fall 2006, so it's about a 4 month lag in hard data. You're seeing it. The forecast is developed. It's then put into the budget. This forecast was done a couple of months ago. It's about a 4 or 5 month lag in hard data. What we've done is put together some procedures whereby we can come up with some statistical models for based on incomplete data for October, November, December, and January. We can actually have some historical completion factors that we can get an estimate as to where things are going, in essence, make that data more current. Because for some programs like the Oregon Health Plan, due to retroactive eligibility and a variety of things, it sometimes is 2 and 3 months before we actually can determine that someone was approved for the plan when they applied 3 months previously, if that makes sense. So we've put together a lot of procedures to be able to better do exactly that, use more current data.
Mr. Bitten.
Yeah, just to your point, the last data that was used for the forecast for 07-09, the last actual data was September
06,
right?
Exactly.
Of 2006. So we're using data through September of 2006 to predict monthly caseloads through June of 2009.
So it's 7 months old.
So it's 2.5 years out from the last actual data. And that's risky.
I kind of figured that one out myself.
Yeah,
thank you, though. Appreciate.
Okay, we're going to show you some more of that risk. So, I ask you to imagine where you draw the line. Well, this was the forecast, and the forecast was that actually we had reached a peak, and we would decline gradually over time. If you flip to the next page, is the work that we did to, rather than put this on the shelf and come back to it in 6 months, what we started to do is follow actual caseloads every month. This is, I will tease, Judy Moore Peterson has done a fantastic job with these forecasts, but these lines, when we see them every month, are what give she and I nightmares. When we don't track exactly like the forecast, that's what, well, if they're going up, it's certainly what keeps us up at night. If they're going down, it keeps us up at night as well. And indeed, what we saw was, although we had predicted the caseloads would slope downward, they really dropped. And that leads us to the next forecast.
Okay, let me ask you this. What impact does the legislature's changes in that make?
Chair Carter, as we had discussed this previously, okay, that our forecasts are dependent on policy changes that are made by the feds, that are made by the legislature, and that are made by the department as well. Our ability to be consistent now in how we determine eligibility from geographic area and from place to place will also affect forecasts. So all of this comes into play. So that's our new forecast. On the next page, this circular line is now what we think will be the forecast. And this gets at exactly what Senator Carter was talking about, which is not only has Senator Bates indicated that the data we're using to do this is old when you get out into 2009, but as you all know, you've spent the last several months talking about a new statewide TANF program, which is great, and we're thrilled, and I think it's one of the best things you're going to come out of the legislature with. But the issue is, we don't know exactly, now we have no historical experience by which to go by. I mean, we have some. I mean, we can, and we'll get close, but we have a risk. And on the next page is what that risk is. Well, one is, well, there's two issues. One is, so the difference, just so you have a magnitude, a scale here, between the forecast that we did the GRB on, and now this new forecast, the reshoot, just for the TANF medical, it's a $30 million general fund difference in that area. And then we get to the next page, which is the variation line. And what you can see is that there's probably about a some of that variation is actually within what we would normally expect. So I put all these out there to just really, as I had indicated, this is sort of the context for the reshoot. Because now, you know, John and Jim will go through all the pieces of the reshoot. You know, I started, Chair Carter, with the punchline, which is $33 million is less of a need for the department, 33 additional dollars to the committee to work with, which are important dollars, which can buy, you know, make huge differences in people's lives. With $33 million, we can provide health care for thousands of people, can take care of addictions and mental health for thousands of people, can do all sorts of things which we know we desperately need in this state. But at the same time, as Senator Bates indicated, I like that line, that these things can giveth and taketh away, and that we just need to understand that, because the major driver for our reshoot today is caseload. And as you'll see, although the punchline is $33 million, actually 87 million is caseload. And then there are some other factors which you'll hear about which get us to, in the end, 33 million.
Questions?
Representative Wilkinson? Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to talk about caseload for a minute. In some circumstances, with a healthier economy and people able to obtain work or work with a better pay, then they need fewer services. But we hear an awful lot about the unmet need. There are many, many people for whom this isn't the case. There is still hunger. There is still a need to take care of children in foster families, for example. One of the drivers that you mentioned was availability or unavailability of treatment. So what I want to ask about is when you mention unavailability of treatment, I have heard two explanations for why people are on waiting lists for weeks, if not months, to get treatment. And I'm talking about people who voluntarily say, I'm ready to have treatment for my mental health condition or for my substance abuse. I'm ready. And that's the sort of person you want to be able to say, we're ready to help you now that you're ready. But they wait for weeks and months, and sometimes that brings on a terrible crisis, if not catastrophe, for that individual or the family. So when we think about the reshoot and how many people aren't getting treatment, just a mere treatment, is some of that due to lack of skilled providers?
Chair Carter and Representative Wilkinson, oftentimes we get into sort of a chicken and egg phenomenon where we, because we don't fund services and programs, we lose infrastructure. And so we lose the ability to have skilled providers providing the service. So in different places it's different things, but it's a combination of both our ability to fund programs as well as then it is the availability. It is, though, you know, a chicken and egg issue.
Madam Chair, then I guess it's with I don't know, it's in some ways this is good news, but I don't interpret this as all good news. And I feel like if we had better funding, to some extent we may not see caseload declining the way it's shown in this reshoot, because it seems like there are still many reasons why we need to be able to provide service.
I agree. Ten comments. Senator Winters and Bates. I guess when I was listening and the question that you asked for those of us that are sitting down here at this end of the dais who have gone through the roller coaster since 2001 and have experienced the infrastructure issue that Dr. Goldberg discussed go away, it's almost as though when at some point we think we're making progress and then the economy or something worsens or a different policy comes about, and so that erodes the things that we have put in place. And so here we are today. It's kind of interesting because we're here in 07 looking at the erosion of infrastructure. When I'm sitting here thinking of particular substance abuse, where as the court will say to a parent that in order to get your children returned to them, you have to go to treatment, and yet as a state and as the caseworker, as much as they would love to have that happen, the resource isn't available. And so on the one hand, you know, to me that 33 is important, and yet I also am realistic enough to know that we have lost providers and we've lost some of our structures. So we are in a chicken and egg and a catch-22, and it is because in bad times, in economical bad times in the state, we don't have the reserve, if you will, or the ability to continue to provide those services. And in human services in the department, it's in the economical downturns when the needs are the greatest. And yet, that tends to be the time when we make the most reductions and the most cuts to programs. And so, just for the record, I needed to say that because we have been like this since 2001, and now we're trying to build our way back out of it. Dr. Bates?
I guess she and I are on the same page today. And I think what you're really asking is, our caseloads are down, but are they down because of economic conditions or because we've driven them down? And there's some truth to both sides of that. One policy decision we've made, and the predictions they're giving us are based on our present policies. One of our present policies is that OHP standard not be brought back up. That would dramatically change all this. We're down to 25,000 lives. Before the recession, we were at 125,000 lives. Those 100,000 people are still getting treated in this state, but we chose to have them treated through a cost shift system. We send them to emergency rooms, we treat them poorly, we treat them with their diseases, some of them die as a result of our policy, and then it gets cost shifted in an insurance premium. So we thought that was the way to handle it. That was our decision. And I, just for fun, I took this piece here and I put another line on it. I showed it to Senator Walker, Senator Winters, and she and I kind of chuckled over it. That line's revenue. As those caseloads are going up, right through the sky in TANF, our revenue is going exactly the opposite direction. So the time that we needed help the most for these people, we gave them nothing. We cut programs. It goes back to what Representative Morgan was saying. We didn't have a rainy day fund then. You can build a rainy day fund in a DHS budget, or you can build it into the entire budget, which I personally prefer, but others can argue that point. Coming out of what we came out of, we dedicated ourselves this time to putting a rainy day fund together. That was the one thing we got done over the session I think we all can be proud of. And that's one of the most important things done, because this is going to happen again, folks. Just as sure as God made little green apples, this is going to happen again. It may be 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years, but it's going to happen again, and I don't want these curves doing this to us.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the time. Okay. Thank you.
Chair Carter?
Yes.
Just two points before I turn it over. One is I need to answer Senator Gordon's question, which I haven't forgotten. And the other is I just want to be certain that people understand that many of our caseloads are still increasing. That there's two issues here. That, and it's well shown on this graph in the health plan. It's not that the savings is from less people. It's from less of an increase than predicted, say, 6 months ago. So if you look at the caseload for the Oregon Health Plan, for the Oregon Health Plan, we're predicting increased need for people to be on the Oregon Health Plan, despite our having cut 100,000 people off OHP standard. We do, within the TANF caseload, see a decline in absolute numbers of people, but overall, that's actually absorbed within this. So some of our caseloads are seeing a decrease, but overall, our overall caseload are higher when you put them all together. The decrease in dollars is they're just a little, they're not going to go up as quickly as we predicted. And I just think that's an important point because it shows us that we're still increasing. We haven't caught up with the decrease of the cuts that we've made, and that it makes it very, very difficult to catch up when we have an increased need on top of what exists, and we haven't been able to fill some of the holes that we dug several years ago. So I didn't want us to walk away without that. In regard to Senator Gordon's issue, which I think is extremely important about preparedness, because it speaks to the risks in all of this. And Senator Gortley had particularly asked about West Nile virus. What we have tried to do within the department and within public health, and we can talk to you more about it outside of the committee today, is look at our ability to have an all hazards preparedness, and not solely to be able to prepare for something like West Nile, which we need to do, but the way and some of the things that you do to prepare for a mosquito-borne problem are very different from how we would prepare for a volcanic eruption or a chemical spill or even an influenza outbreak. And the issue is to be able to develop the infrastructure to be able to respond to whether it's whatever kind of emergency situation we have: radiation, chemical, biologic, natural, etc. And our ability, we're not fully prepared. And we need additional resources and ability to prepare ourselves as a state to be able to take care of not only our most vulnerable citizens, but everybody in the state who will see the effects of that.
Thank you. Doctor, I hate to cut you, but we need to move on because we've got lots of work.
And can I just say thank you?
Yeah.
Because the discussion we just had was, I think, the kind of discussion which, I mean, this is great, and I think the way we need to sort of think about things. And thank you all, because it's been a great discussion.
Thank you.
So now we can get at the details.
I just wanted to thank you for bringing up the emergency preparedness angle, because we're not only not fully prepared, we're not prepared. And in being not prepared, we're not funded to even begin to be prepared. So thank you for putting that on the record.
The other thing I heard this morning while Mr. Britton is passing out material, I heard on the OPB as I was coming down here that they're expecting a big outbreak in the area you were just talking about.
West Nile.
In Oregon. And so I want you to talk to me about that, because I think we should be on record as being prepared to back some solutions.
We will come back with our folks who are most knowledgeable.
We've heard of them. Why did you talk to me about resources? Thank you, Mr. Gordon.
Madam Chair, I've handed out a document prepared by the department, which on the first page shows the major reshoot items. And I think at this point in time, John Swanson, the budget director, is going to review this with you.
Swanson?
Thank you. On behalf of the Chair Carter and committee members, for the record, my name is John Swanson. I'm the administrator with the department in the unit of finance and policy analysis. What we want to do today is to present a department-level, summary-level review of our reshoot of the GRB, the 2007-09 GRB. And I want to just mention that to start off, because about a month ago, we addressed the committee with our April 2007 rebalance of this current biennium. And what you will see today will be familiar with that. There are several items. Most of the larger general fund issues here were also on that rebalance, and a result of continued projections of caseloads, as we've just been talking about, also the result of continuation of those issues into the next biennium. The roll-up factor of those issues comprise several of the larger pieces of today's presentation. You have in front of you the summary display of our reshoot, and the first item you can see is what we've been talking about in terms of the caseload changes in the Division of Medical Assistance Plans, Children, Adults, and Families, Seniors, People with Disabilities, and the Public Health Division. As a result, the aggregate of all those changes in costs, caseloads and caseload costs results about an $87.4 million general fund reduction to the governor's recommended budget. $185.8 million total funds. There's also a reduction of positions in FTE that are in the field associated with those reductions in caseloads, which we'll talk about. The second item is also an item that you saw in the April rebalance, and this is an issue around our 10F maintenance of effort situation where we've needed to rearrange our funding mixes in order to achieve the maintenance of effort and avoid penalties in the next couple of federal fiscal years. Again, each of these have further detail, which I will go into. Third item relates to, again, a roll-up effect of some other funds and federal funds shortfall that were identified in April. They were also a problem in our GRB because they were in the base of the governor's recommended budget and will need to be adjusted as well. The fourth item is a roll-up or continuation of some additional cost situations at the Oregon State Hospital and Blue Mountain Recovery Center in regards to staff costs and personal service costs, professional service costs, which will continue into the next biennium based upon what was brought forward in the April rebalance. The rest of the items on the sheet are more adjustments and corrections that are new to the reshoot and not necessarily brought forward in the rebalance. Item five is the aggregate of all the different kinds of adjustments that we've found and that are needed in policy packages and essential packages in the governor's recommended budget, some of which are to adjust for caseload effects on the policy packages. They're also to correct for some adjustments or corrections that we found along the way that need to be put right. The next item is a slight decline in the federal medical assistance percentage, the FMAP rate, a 0.04% reduction, which is, I just wanted to call that one out, separately, it's not a large amount. And then the last detail item is a change in the amount of capital construction funding in our budget for the Oregon State Hospital project and related cost of issuance and debt service costs with that. The remaining items roll up to about to less than $1 million of general fund and an overall reduction of total funds. So that's the summary. Are there any questions at this point? I'll get moving through the detail. Okay. Pages 2 and 3, similar display of what we looked at in the rebalance. And again, as a refresher, the different types of caseload categories are down the left side for Division of Medical Assistance Plans, CAF, and Seniors and People with Disabilities, and the Public Health Division ADAP program. The first set of numbers to the right of that are caseloads. The first column there are the new caseload forecast, the one just done in spring that our rebalance was based on and then continued out for the next biennium for our reshoot. The middle column there was the governor's recommended budget basis, which was the fall-December forecast, and you can see the changes in the different kinds of caseloads. Cost per cases are the next section of the report, some variations in the net cost per case of all types of service in terms of fee-for-service or managed care. And then the cost change in general fund in the next column to the right there. Since we have presented this information throughout our explanations of our division presentations, and we spent quite a bit of time on this, I just have to open up and see if you have any questions. I would note that in the middle of that page, you'll see the about $7.4 million general fund reduction in related to field staff, less field staff need because of the decline in caseloads. So I guess with that, I would open it up for any questions on the caseload piece since we have talked about that in some detail.
Okay. Sure.
Less case staff need means layoffs of staff?
No, it's when we built the budget, we anticipated increase in caseloads in GRB, so we increased the budgeted number of positions. We just won't need those budgeted.
Okay.
The next item on pages 4 and 5 relate to our TANF funds shift in regards to maintenance of effort, and I'm sure that your again is going to walk us through that piece.
I'm Jim Scherzinger, Deputy for Finance Department of Human Services, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As John said, this item is largely a roll-up of the issues that were presented on our rebalance about a month ago. So I'll go through it relatively quickly and hit the high points. We have, of course, talked about this before. Mo is a fixed spending requirement within self-sufficiency in CAF, and we have, and so even if we have caseload reductions, and we've counted some of those caseload savings in the prior page, we still have to spend a fixed amount of general fund. And so here we're adding back costs in part just to, well, we're adding back costs to meet the MO requirement for the next biennium.
Oh, sure.
Just a minute, Mr. Senator Biggs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from my education, what is the fixed amount of general fund we have to spend? Is that based on population, based on population that qualifies for tenure? Are we a state that's not spending what the federal government thinks we should? Where does this come from? What is it?
Senator Bates, Madam Chair, it's based on a fixed percentage of a past spending amount, historical spending amount. So it says you have to spend 85 or 90%, whatever the it adjusts depending upon other factors of an amount we spent in the past. So it's a maintenance of effort requirement. It says that you have to maintain a spending level that you maintained in the past.
Ms. Baker?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, in particular, the TANF requirement is based on a 1994 spending level, and it's fixed to the extent that as long as you're meeting the regulations for the TANF program related to work requirements, you have a certain level of TANF, of general fund expenditures or state expenditures that you must do to receive your federal TANF funds. So what has happened over time is that although that requirement has been fixed, our expenditures, our general fund expenditures have gone down as caseloads have gone down, and that's why it has become a particularly important issue for this particular rebalance. The amount on the top of page 5, the department's identified the assumption for the 07-09 biennium, and Jim can talk more about that, but it assumes that we will not, in fact, meet the requirement in terms of work participation for the first year of the biennium, but we will for the second. If, in fact, we don't meet it for the second year of the biennium, that requirement jumps up by another $6 million. But the short answer is it's based on 1994 expenditures, and then you calculate your eligible expenditures relative to that amount, but it can be adjusted if your program is not meeting those work participation requirements.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't want to take more of the committee's time. We'll talk about this later.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we will be talking more TANF next week when we look at the redesign bill, so I guess I'll leave it till then. The one point about if we don't meet the work participation, our MOE requirement goes up. So,
right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, if you go down on the specific cost items that are listed on page 4, under number 2, there was a change in the interpretation of what is eligible for MO spending in the middle of the last biennium. And as a result of that change in interpretation, the department shifted expenditures out of child welfare, general fund expenditures out of child welfare into self-sufficiency, and that was called a swap. We swapped expenditures into there to make them eligible to be counted toward MO and covered those expenditures with federal funds. Well, unfortunately, in the process, we over-swapped. We ended up trying to fund some people who are not eligible for federal funding with federal funding, and we have to correct that. And that is about a $6 million adjustment. Rolling the adjustment we had on the rebalance, which we had it there, forward into the next biennium. Then on item 3, which has the discussion or detail to it, there's a $20 million again, roll-up of a cost in the rebalance to meet a $189.4 million general fund vote requirement. That, as Sheila said, that was based on an assumption that the MOE requirement is $189.4 million, which is assuming that we will not meet the work participation requirement 1 year of the next biennium, and we will meet it in the second. It's about a $6 million per year adjustment if you don't meet the requirement, or increase if you don't meet the requirement. The amount that adds on the general fund is $20 million in reshoot. Again, that's a roll-up of a number that was in the rebalance.
Can I just point out, because I think it's important, that one of the reasons for, and it really gets at the previous discussion, reasons for not meeting the work participation requirement is that the rules have changed in terms of what counts towards that by the federal government, that the federal government made changes in what counts as work participation, and as such, in the past, things that counted towards work participation in this program now don't, and that's the problem. And particularly around issues such as individuals who have difficulties finding jobs because they have mental health or substance abuse problems. And this gets at some of the chicken and egg in a different way that we spoke about, that in the past, individuals who needed to have mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment, if they were in treatment that could count towards work participation to get them able to have a job, now that's been drastically curtailed, and we cannot count anything past 6 weeks. So I just wanted to be certain that the committee understood that our inability to meet that participation is, once again, a federal policy change, and one which we're very concerned about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. So the MOE requirements for 0709 that are assumed here, does that include the new investment that we're hoping to make? Currently slated at $20 million in general fund, I'm hoping more like $28 million. I'm just wondering, is that included in this?
Whatever is included in the governor's budget is included.
Is assumed dead.
In the GRB, okay. Correct. Anything that's not in the GRB.
So far?
Yes.
So if we invest a little bit more than what's in the GRB or the co-chairs, then we will assist ourselves with the maintenance of effort issue.
Right. And if you spend less, you can also go the other way.
Okay. Thank you.
But we can also spend differently and
right.
still achieve that.
Right.
Correct.
The item B under there is making it clear that in the past, the department has had a practice of front-loading its spending. And the reason for that is that it's typically behind in meeting the requirement at the end of every federal fiscal year, which is 3 months different from our biennium time period. It ends.
Can you say that one more time? Please just supplement.
The federal fiscal year ends in September. It begins in October. Our biennium ends in June. We're typically behind in trying to meet the federal requirement. And so in that three-month period between the time that our biennium ends and a new one begins and the federal fiscal year ends, we front load or we spend a lot of general fund money to meet that federal requirement. And so we're front loading our general fund spending at the beginning of a biennium in order to meet the federal requirement. And this, all we're trying to do is make clear here that this assumes that we're continuing to do that. We're not catching up in the sense of getting on a more current basis of meeting the requirement. We're continuing to front load our expenditures at the beginning of the biennium and then at the end of the biennium stopping the general fund spending in order to balance our budget. Item C, on the other hand, is that there is other spending within the state budget, and I know you're going to get into a much larger discussion of this, other spending within the state budget that can be used to meet the MOE obligation. In this estimate, we are assuming that we will get $5.82 million more in MOE credit from the Housing and Community Services. And so that is a credit that's assumed in this effort. We know that there are efforts, and we've been part of them, of trying to identify other additional ways of meeting the MOE obligation. But the assumption that's in here is a 5.82 additional from other state agencies that were not currently, it's not currently happening in the current biennium.
Thank you. Jim, what is your response? I'm kind of new to the Ways and Means process. The fact that your budget, your maintenance of effort in particular, may be contingent upon another agency's spending habits, does that make you feel just a wee bit vulnerable?
Senator, Madam Chair, I think you can imagine, I mean certainly it would make you feel you have less control. This is a large budget, but I think what it really means to me is that we have to do our best to make the policy choices clear. This is something that requires coordination across the whole of state government and certainly within the legislative process and with DAS. And so our job ought to be to make these choices as clear as we can make them, and to be sure that the issues are dealt with in a timely fashion. And in that sense, you know, we should be used to be uncertain. We went through all this discussion about caseloads. This is nothing compared to the caseload discussion. And not that it's not nothing, but it's relative to that. The risk we're involved here is less because it's a fixed amount, and we ought to be able to manage it. But we just have to involve others in helping us solve these problems, and that's doable. We just can't say that we're the only ones that can solve these problems.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I almost feel like you guys should be wearing pointed hats and have magic wands in your hands.
We'll take whatever help we can get.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just want to remind folks that although maintenance of effort tends to become a budgeting exercise, this is supposed to be a percentage of what we were spending for this population in 1994. And we struggle to meet that percentage. So I think it has larger policy implications of what we have not been doing in this state. So although we search around for other things that we ought to be doing already to make it count, I just think we should remember why we're doing this in the first place.
This is another example of the root causes. We have an MOE problem because we've cut our spending on this program from what it was.
Absolutely.
And what we're doing now is a variety of budgetary and other issues to make up for that, that make our financial management extremely complicated.
Mm-hmm. Now that you've been informed,
Let's move on to the next item, pages 6 and 7. Again, these are should be familiar. These are continuation of roll-up provisions brought forward in the April rebalance, and they relate to changes or reductions, shortfalls, and other in federal funds revenues that we've identified that because they're in the base also of the governor's recommended budget will need to be adjusted. A couple of the larger ones I will point out there. The first one relates to a discussion we had last week a little bit around the concept of the federal approved cost allocation plan that the department has, and the funding splits within the administrative services division. And what this represents is adjusting the funding splits for the 709 budget, GRB, to reflect what the most current results of that cost allocation plan revealed in April. So it revealed that we were not receiving the federal funding distribution that we had in the base, and we have to adjust it here. Also, a couple of items that affect addictions and mental health division in regards to other and federal funds that we've identified will not be received this year, and will need, or this biennium will need to be adjusted in the next biennium as well, particularly in the area of Medicare participation and reimbursements from insurance payments. We have a couple of areas where we are anticipating additional revenues in Medicaid Part D benefits and from recoveries, estate recoveries, and seniors, people with disabilities. Overall, this nets out to about $14.8 million general fund need rolled up into the next biennium.
Senator, quick question, point three on page six, and I can read this clearly. As identified in April 2007 rebalance of the 0507 DHS budget, fewer Oregon State Hospital patients have been Medicaid eligible. Is that a fewer number, or is that a lower percentage of overall patients?
It's a lower percentage. Both. Probably both, yeah.
Okay.
The next item.
Senator Bates, Senator the Boots will answer.
Is that because we have more forensic patients in the mix who are not Medicaid eligible? What's the reason for the drop in the percentage or the mixture?
Senator Carter, Chair Carter, Senator Bates. I think the major issue there was that we erred when we closed the children's wards last biennium and did not remove enough Medicaid at that time for the loss of those patients and left that in the budget and it rolled forward.
Mr. Britton?
Yeah, just to clarify, and Mr. Nickel can come up if he wants to, but we do not get Medicaid match on persons from 18 years of age, I believe, up to about 65. We don't have many, if I'm correct, above 65 years of age. And the children's ward, which obviously had people under 18, which did receive Medicaid match, was closed. However, when the budget was constructed, that assumption of federal revenue based on a continuation of that kid's, you know, was incorrect.
Comments, Mr. Nickel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Nickel, Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services and in charge of Addictions and Mental Health Division. Those explanations are essentially correct. I do want to just add that we have more non-Medicaid eligible people rolling forensics than we did before, so that was also a correct guess or assumption on Senator Bates' part.
Yeah, I want people to know that even with us, with the cost of PSRB taking our dollars up, those people are still mentally ill. So, and I wanted to put that on the record because I was talking to especially some members of the mental health community, and I know people get kind of concerned about us spending so much on hospital, but at the same time, we're still dealing with mentally ill people within the institution. And even those at a PSRB.
I'm sure that's correct.
Thank you. Further questions, Ms. Nickel? Thank you, sir.
Okay. The next item on page 8 relates to again, a roll-up issue from the April rebalance plan in regards to additional costs that were incurring at the Oregon State Hospital. These are related to issues that we have talked about a number of times in regards to staffing levels, and we need to contract for services to maintain certain staff-to-patient ratios and comply with some law requirements settlement requirements that have occurred. The roll-up of this at the Oregon State Hospital is about $12.4 million. About $5 million of that is in personal services, and about 7.7 of that is in professional services, contract services. And we have a similar situation with the Blue Mountain Recovery Center in Eastern Oregon, but at a smaller amount of money, about $900,000 there.
Madam Chair.
And roll up issues from the rebalance.
Excuse me for a minute. Representative Kotak?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And every time I see this issue, I'm wondering, could you remind us what we're going to do about the fact that we're paying so much overtime and we're going to continue to see this rebalance issue? I know we're all planning for the new state hospital a couple years down the line here. So is there could you remind me how we're going to resolve this, or how often you're going to come back and give us some plan on this?
Dr. Goldberg, that's a very, very good question, because not only am I seeing it here, but we saw it a little further back in terms of overtime. Even though I think it's nice for you to remind the committee that I do know in mental health in the hospital what is taking place, but
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, we're taking a closer look right now, actually, at how we contract for those nurses and how we deploy them, and making sure that we're not spending anything more than we have to, either through overtime or through the contracts that we have. But the basis for the whole problem is really the national nurses shortage. So we are not going to solve that problem entirely, but we do need to work in Oregon first in getting additional nursing training slots. We need to then pay our nurses better, and we need to improve the working environment for them. Those are the parts of the solution. I'm going to be producing at least a preliminary report. I was hoping to get it out before the legislative session ended. It depends now, I guess, on when you adjourn. But at least in the next
week.
I am going to be issuing at least a preliminary report on a psychiatric nurse workforce development team that I started about 5 months ago. And that will contain a lot more detail to help answer the question you're raising. It's a very good one.
We look forward to seeing that. Thank you.
There's really two issues. One is the budget issue, which this deals with, and the fact that we had never constructed our budgets and keep rolling forward what have been costs, particularly for overtime, that continue to happen and were never figured into the budget. This takes care of what I would call a structural budget problem. There's a larger, however, issue of moving toward what can we do to decrease overtime, hire more nurses, deal with some of the issues that Bob's talking about, which we're going to deal with as well. So two pieces of that.
Okay. Dr. Gates.
Madam Chair, I'm going to take just a little bit of issue here with you. I don't think we're really on the wrong or different pages, but what I'm reading is because of the number of patients in OSH is over the budget level. It's a very telling sentence. We can keep throwing more nurses and more space at people at the hospital, but we're not going to solve the problem doing that. What we need is community-based mental health treatment to keep these people out of a hospital, keep them out of emergency rooms, and keep them out of the Oregon State Hospital. I started out by saying the reshoot giveth and the reshoot taketh away. This is where it taketh away. If we don't, in this session, in this week, put serious money into community-based health, this thing will be bigger and bigger and bigger. We'll be spending money on the back end, what's most expensive, and not get the needs taken care of, but we need to take care of in our communities. This is just one piece. There's two branches to this. There's this branch, and there's our prison system branch. That's even more expensive. So
we haven't resolved it. I mean, we got it, and this is a conversation, because we have to resolve, come to some kind of resolution in terms of the med, those that are mentally ill, that are in PSLB hands, as well as those that we think are just totally mentally ill and not PSLB there. You know?
And get early treatment to them before they commit a crime, before they enter the system. And we're not doing that. And if we don't take steps to that right now, we will not be able to maintain this hospital. I don't care how many nurses you train, how many doctors you bring in, how many wings you add to it, or how many hospitals you build, you won't be able to do it. We've got to take care of the front end first.
We're in total agreement.
Thank you.
This has been our exact discussion all afternoon, has been trying to get at the root causes of many of the issues instead of dealing with things at the back end.
Thank you.
What I'd like you to do to end on this page
and pick it up on Monday. And then Mr. Britton has some papers to pass out for us to be prepared for our meeting on Monday.
Yes, members, I think what the chair would like to do is to carry over this public hearing on House Bill 1531, right?
Yes, that's right.
Until Monday, so we can wrap up the reshoot discussion then. But also, we have a work session scheduled for House Bill 5038, which is the Office of Private Health Partnerships. And I've put together a memo for all of you that describes my recommendations for that particular budget. So I'm going to hand that out to you. Hopefully, we'll have time to get to that for the latter part of Monday, Madam Chair.
Hey, may I encourage all of our members to do your reading and looking at the budgets on these issues, because once we get started, I want to move with expediency, of course, but I'd like to have you up to date on your reading material. Thank you. So we're going to close our hearing today on House Bill 5031, only to carry it over into our Monday session. Thank you.